There are a lot of assumptions and challenges that I think that we think about based on hearsay, classmates, what our parents experienced, that we think, oh, we should do what they did. But the world's so different. You know, when you dial back 20 years and what you needed to be able to get into certain roles, very different today. And I think one of the big things is that employers are starting to really rethink what are the needs that a student needs to have to be able to be employed at their companies. I think they're letting go of, they have to have a certain level of pedigree of the type of a level of school.
The Digital to Learn podcast is dedicated to exploring both what's new and what's good in the use of technology in teaching and learning.
Our mission is to have the best minds sitting in front of our microphones, sharing evidence-based strategies for digital teaching and learning.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
Thank you for joining us. And now, the Digital to Learn podcast.
Welcome to Digital to Learn. I'm Tiffany Snyder, and I'm here with my co-host, Brad Garner. Hi, Brad.
Hey there.
We've been tracking down an all-star in the area of career development and innovation for over a year, and he's joining us for the podcast this week and next. Andy Chan is the Vice President for Innovation and Career Development at Wake Forest University. Chan oversees a range of innovative initiatives at Wake Forest, including the nationally recognized Office of Personal and Career Development for Students and Alumni, the Wake West Network based in San Francisco, the WF Board of Trustees Innovation Committee, and other university-wide innovation initiatives and projects. Chan also oversees the Center for Innovation, Creativity and Entrepreneurship, the Mentoring Resource Center, the Visiting Executive Program, and an emerging program in leadership and character. Through his work at Wake Forest and across higher education industry, Chan is leading the transformation of traditional career services to become a mission-critical component of the college experience. Chan and the OPCD have been featured in the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, The Washington Post, TEDx, MSNBC, NPR, USA Today, Inside Higher Education, and The Chronicle of Higher Education. Welcome to the Digital to Learn podcast, Andy Chan.
Hi, Tiffany. Hi, Brad. It's great to be here today.
Great to have you with us.
Yeah, so we're going to start with some fun questions just to get to know you a bit better. Now, I will admit that we did talk to Andy a little bit before we started recording, and I realized that one of our questions is regarding snow. And I'm learning that he may or may not actually experience snow in his current living situation. So we'll see how we can adapt to that one. But the first question is, what is a holiday tradition in a Chan family that you could share with us?
So a tradition we enjoy doing is going out and driving around town late at night during the week of Christmas to just see all of the lights. And there's certain neighborhoods where like every house is lit up. It's very fun to either drive with our car lights off through the town or just park someplace and just take a walk together. I have pictures of my kids when they were very, very young in front of these really beautiful homes with beautiful lights. And now they are actually all young adults and they can remember stories of actually like scrambling up on people's doorsteps and little places where they've actually got little elves and things like out where they just remember it so fondly. And it's really fun to actually remember those things and just sort of reflect on that. It's a very beautiful time.
Absolutely.
Okay. And the next question is January. I don't know if you make New Year's resolutions, but is there one that you've made over the years that came true that you followed through on?
Oh, wow, Brad, I wasn't expecting you to ask me that question. I thought you were going to ask me what a new New Year's resolution I had, but now you've asked me, do I have a New Year's resolution that I can follow through on? So what I will tell you is that the most interesting thing is thinking back to January of 2020, like what I thought the year was going to be like, and then what I actually did. And one of the things that did happen that was very unusual was, so I'm a pretty big swimmer. I actually swam all the way back in college, stopped for a while, and then picked it back up again because I sort of banged up my body skiing and playing tennis and basketball and things like that. And so I thought I really would stick with that. But what happened is the pool is closed. So then I actually have a couple friends who are runners that I just started going jogging with them thinking, you know, I've got to do something. And before you know it, I have become a runner where I run like 10 to 15 miles a week now. And I couldn't ever believe that would even be possible. So that's one where I say, being fit is a goal of mine, but I never really thought I'd actually turn into a runner. So that's actually sort of a surprise.
Wow.
So how how do you motivate yourself to run 10 or 15 miles a week?
Part of it is that I have friends to do it with. So that actually is one. Now doing it even with masks on. And then the other is that we have a little app that we heard about called Strava, where you actually record what you do using like your phone or your watch or something like that. And then when, if you're not together, when someone does it, you can give each other thumbs up. And actually there's a little bit of a competition when people aren't doing it or, you know,
I knew not it.
Yeah.
Of course.
Nice.
Now you said you had one set for this year. So go ahead and ask about that. What's your resolution for this year?
Wow. I would say, so one of them right now is that, so I'm entering sort of a later stage in life where I'm really spending time thinking about my connection to my parents. Both my parents are Chinese and my dad actually lives in Taiwan. He wasn't raised there, but he lives there. And one of the things that I always realized is that we didn't spend a lot of time really reflecting on our Asian heritage. And so I've been spending some time thinking about that and began to think about, well, why didn't I ever really learn Chinese? So I actually had a lot of times where I tried to and really just gave up because it was very so hard. But I've tried Duolingo and I'm actually on a streak right now where I think I'm already close to 70 days straight of like learning some Chinese. And I know I think 100 words. So I'm committed to stick with that. So we'll see. Maybe next year we can hold this interview in Chinese.
Oh my.
That's awesome.
Between running and Chinese, I feel low.
Lifelong learner. That's where like an education, right? Always trying to learn new things.
Absolutely.
Back in 2013, I was working in career development and came across a TED Talk, which now has over 40,000 views. And this TED Talk was titled, Why Career Services Must Die. Career Services Must Die. That TED Talk changed everything for the career development team that I was working on. And we wanted to know more. Who was the speaker? And it was none other than Andy Chan. So it was back then that I first wanted to reach out and engage with Andy. But later on in my career, I transitioned to digital teaching and learning and came across Andy's second work, which is a follow-up on that original TED Talk that has gained so much traction. So again, we're excited to have Andy Chan on the podcast today. And Andy, can you tell us about that initial TED Talk and what the response felt like for you and how it changed your career trajectory too?
Thanks, Tiffany, and really glad that you heard my original talk and were inspired to follow the path that you've been on and trying to make a difference in higher education, really to try to transform the experience for all students. When I began this process, just actually, interestingly, I used to work at the Career Center at Stanford Business School running that program there. And it's a very small group of students, about 400 students each year in each class, so a total of 800 in the two-year program. And I always thought about how could I make a bigger impact beyond this group of students who are very accomplished, very capable, are incredible leaders. And I started just thinking about the college student experience. And interestingly, around the same time, the president of Wake Forest asked me if I'd be willing to come work there and figure out how to really transform how they do it there. But one of the things that I think he must have known me pretty well that he said is, you know, Andy, if what we do, we learn and do really well, we'd love to share it with the rest of the industry because part of what education is about is actually trying to make it better for everyone. And I was really motivated by that. Like I just have always felt like, gosh, it's great to work for an institution, but how can we actually help everyone else in the whole overall system? And so what occurred was in getting the chance to do that talk, like I really did think about most of the feedback that we were getting from students and alumni as they graduated. And the fact is that they all felt like, I wish I had learned more about the work world and how to prepare for the work world than I actually really got. I think certain programs, whether it be a program like in business or maybe in nursing, where it's very vocationally and sort of professionally oriented, you're going to get that type of training because it's just part of the academic education. But there's a lot of other programs where it's a lot less clear. You know, it's one just where there's so many options that students have that it can be a bit paralyzing. you know, there's a lot of scientific work on the idea of choice paralysis. Like the more choices you have, the harder it is to make a decision. And I actually think a lot of students, when they go into college, it's almost what happens is you start to realize I have so many choices, I don't know what to decide. And so I was trying to call out to not just people in the career office, but actually all the leaders in the university, the faculty, other administrators, that thinking through how mission critical this is for a student, it should become mission critical for the university institution itself. And I did definitely hit a nerve because I definitely got the impression that people wondered, like, why would I make such a bold statement in the title, Career Services Must Die? And it definitely was not about any kind of nature of being critical of career services. It's actually trying to say we need to rethink the way we do it and rethink what it means to be career ready, career and life ready. Really think about career education as part of the educational process for a young adult. And how can we make that actually part of the academic experience as well as sort of the extracurricular experience, what it's traditionally is within the college experience. And I think what did occur was a lot of people realized, we need to do more, not exactly sure what that might be. And what are some potential ways we could do it? And we actually had a conference at Wake Forest that ended up bringing hundreds of schools together to talk a bit about it with people from also, not just the career side or on the employer side, but also the academic side. And what we have found is that the schools that actually make the career experience more academic in nature or part of the academic requirements, and it doesn't have to be credit-based, although it does really incentivize students to work if it is credit-based, that has the hugest impact in terms of students really doing the work, understanding what it is that's required, but also being more motivated in the classroom. Because the more the students actually feel like I know or have a sense for where I want to go, I now know how to think about what I'm doing in the classroom with that context. And I also would say that those students we've seen actually through data in the classes that we have at Wake Forest, that those students tend to do better in the classroom grade-wise. They tend to actually engage in the career process more than others who don't. And then they also end up getting jobs earlier and also getting paid at a higher rate. So when you make it academic, the students actually are, again, more motivated and more successful. So I'm hoping that a lot of schools would be willing to do that. But there have been challenges. And that's probably the other part of the question you ask is, as I did this second talk called Career Services Must Die Part 2, I was invited by Deborah Quazzo at ASU GSV. So they do a conference every year that's all about innovations within higher education. And she asked me just to do a reprise and sort of say what happened in the past 7 years and what's going to happen in the next 7 years going forward. And so I was able to spend a little bit of time sort of recapping that. I don't have to go over the talk because actually you can find it on YouTube or on LinkedIn if you go to my feed on LinkedIn, you can find it. But I do think that that's something that I'd love to talk to you about if you want to, but we can talk about anything else too.
I'm curious to know what it's like to give a TED talk.
So you know, it's in the beginning, it's actually a little intimidating because there's a lot of structure that they give you around the amount of time that you are supposed to speak within. And so what happens is that, like me, I tend to enjoy talking, telling stories, being very clear about what I'm trying to say. So I usually end up thinking, I on this topic, especially something I'm passionate about, I could probably talk for an hour, but they're trying to get it down to like 12 to 15 minutes. And so you have to really start to think through what is the story that you might tell or the way you might say something and get it down to that amount of time. That's probably the first thing that's very difficult. It's very much a shaving back, cutting back process to get to the core. Mm-hmm. And then the second thing is that you have to rehearse it out loud. If you try to do it the first time, you either go too fast, or like me, sometimes I'll be talking and I'll think about three other things that I want to add on top of what I just said. And before you know it, I've gone way over the 15 minutes. So that's a big part of it. So I ended up having, I think you can see in the first video, a little cheat sheet that I was able to use that actually helped me to make sure I stayed on track. But I will say the one thing that is very interesting is that when I did this second talk, which actually happened to be on Zoom, that actually is easier because in some ways, you actually can see your slides and see your notes in front of you without necessarily feeling like it has to be all memorized in your head. That's actually a little bit easier for you to be able to navigate. But I do love being in person with people. The energy in the room actually really does help. So I do think that's one of the things that's a lot of fun about it.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
back to the whole career issue, I'm wondering at what level students picking a major actually have a sense of what that will turn into as a career.
Yeah, you know, I think it's funny in the career world, as a person who, you know, is trained to learn how to counsel and work with students, every answer really starts with, it depends. It depends on the person. and every person's got their own individual story, which makes actually this work really fun, very creative, very interesting, but also a challenge, because what people want are generalized answers for individualized questions. And what I would say is that what people do know, and I actually have some talks we do with our students where we actually have a class where we talk about the world of work, and we talk about the idea around, when you think about your major connecting to jobs, we have a phrase at Wake Forest that's I think all the students know pretty well. It's, you're not married to your major. And the reason why we say that is because we want them to realize that I can study whatever I want, but that you can do a lot of things outside of the classroom that can help you navigate to many different types of careers. There are a handful of careers where what you study can make a huge difference to be able to get to that particular career. And those are ones where they require quite a bit of technical knowledge, like many areas of engineering, and also certain things like accounting, where if you, and computer science, you know, music, if you actually do those things at high intensity levels with lots of time, it'll help you get jobs in those areas, because the people hiring want you to have that experience. It doesn't mean you couldn't do it out of the classroom. You just have to do a lot of work out of the classroom to enable yourself to do that. There are a lot of other roles and jobs where actually it is less needed, but can be helpful. And so I do think that's the kind of thing we try to help students understand. We also try to help them understand like when it might help to get extra certifications or maybe even a graduate degree that'll help you to be able to get certain types of employment. There are a lot of assumptions and challenges that I think that we think about based on hearsay, classmates, what our parents experienced, that we think, oh, we should do what they did. But the world's so different. You know, when you dial back 20 years and what you needed to be able to get into certain roles, very different today. And I think one of the big things, and this is part of my second talk that I gave, Career Services Must Die Part 2, is that employers are starting to really rethink what are the needs that a student needs to have to be able to be employed at their companies. I think they're letting go of, they have to have a certain level of pedigree of the type of a level of school. They're actually letting go of things like what their actual GPA is, because maybe that's not the number one factor as to being a good employee. They're actually looking at people from different backgrounds of all types, because they realize diverse workforces are way more beneficial to have than having people who all like look the same, think the same, have gone to all the same schools. And so I do think that that's a huge positive thing in terms of where the world is going. But because of that, students need to actually like be emboldened to live into this new world, because I think a lot of times students are thinking, you know, I'm a low person on the ladder, and so my opportunities are really limited. So they might sort of accidentally put boundaries that are not real boundaries in terms of what the possibilities might be. And so that's a big thing that I really am, you know, I really try to encourage students to think big, to think boldly, and to try to do things that maybe things haven't been done before, even though it may feel a little bit scary, because I think the world's actually becoming more accepting of that than people realize.
So do you find today students being more flexible in terms of thinking about their career as a process, not just I'm going to get this job and that's where I'm going to stay?
Interesting question. I think that too is a little interesting in that I think there's an openness to it, right? I think students have probably seen enough in their own parents' lives about the types of varied types of jobs or changes that have happened due to the changing economy over the last 20 years. But I think all people, for whatever reason, are wired in a way to want more stability and more predictability and sort of to eke out uncertainty in their lives. So even though they're open to knowing that will happen, it's not really what they want. Right. So it's like I'd rather have it be more predictable than it to be unpredictable. But I think people are ready for it. And I think people, you know, there was a topic that Bob Waterman, who wrote the book In Search of Excellence back in the late 90s. So he was the chairman of the board of one of the companies that I worked at. And he authored a Harvard Business School paper called Career Self-Reliance. And the idea behind Career Self-Reliance is that you actually have to, you have to own your career and you have to manage your career, and your company's not going to take care of you, which today in 2020 feels like just, that's just the way it is. But back in the late 90s, it was very much a change because companies like Hewlett Packard, IBM were very sort of paternalistic. We're going to take care of our employees for life. And so that has been sort of the old way that people used to think about how work was. And so I think that now people, you know, that's really changed. One of the things actually I do make a point of actually in my second talk is this idea that the way students learn, earn, and yearn today is different than the way it used to be. So learn, they are, you know, students before they even come to college are learning in all different means, not just in the classroom, but they have so much information on their phones that they are more capable probably of learning through technology than, you know, than we've ever seen before. And they can get information in so many different ways that we've never seen before. So I do think that's one thing that we have to understand and accept what and how they earn. So, you know, the things like a gig economy job, the things like having three jobs at the same time and balancing them, the things like actually being a celebrity influencer on a social media channel where you could actually do just that and be a millionaire. Like that did not exist actually 10, 15, 20 years ago. And you can, and that's even, that's possible. And so, you know, the fact that there are people who are going to medical school and are Uber drivers at the same time, like who thinks that's possible? Well, I drive, ride an Uber, and half the time I'm meeting some student who's actually like, you know, doing some really cool thing, but actually making some extra money. Like these are things that, you know, you didn't even have before. So I think that that earning is different. And then the last is the yearning. And I think that the students actually seek to have more independence, individuality, to be able to work in places that are sort of safe, open, welcoming environments. Like they're expecting a lot from their employers. And I think a lot of employers are starting to shift. But the students themselves, especially in a good economy, have more opportunity to make choices about where, what they want to do and where they want to work. And so that too is another balancing thing that when you think about it, our educational institutions have to adapt to those changes. Mm-hmm. It's like we have to adapt to the students and to the market and the world that they're entering, as opposed to thinking we can just sort of do it the way we used to do 20 or 30 years ago because the students will figure it out on their own. It's like we should all be more aligned. And I do think that in a strange way, COVID has forced us to actually think more like that because we're starting to realize, wait, this technology thing, yes, it's difficult, but there's some benefits to it. It doesn't mean everyone has to go to all technology all the time, but there are, I think, some professors who maybe before had thought, oh, can't do this online stuff. I can say that about even my own team. You know, my own career coaches would say, you know, I don't think an online appointment is going to be all that good. Well, what's happened is they started to realize this is actually working out pretty well. And oh, by the way, it's a little bit more convenient for me. I can shift my time to work on my kids' schedules, to work around the student schedules. And even though I'd like to go to the office, maybe I don't go quite as often, or maybe we sort of change that a little bit, but we are seeing more students than we've ever seen because it's actually more convenient for the students to meet us in the online format and make reservations that way than it is to actually have to walk the 10 or 15 minutes across campus to find us, which again, that's not that inconvenient, but in this world, it feels inconvenient. So I think that's actually pretty interesting.
Well, first of all, you need to know that Brad Garner is actually a celebrity influencer. You can find him on Instagram. This is just something he volunteers to do on the side, this podcast.
Right, Brad?
When I'm not driving my Uber.
When he's, yeah.
There you go.
In Indiana. Thanks for joining us for part one with Andy Chan. We're going to be back next week with part two. You can find our episodes on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Pandora. Also, check out our website at www.digitaltolearn2.com. Thanks. See you next week.
Thank you for joining us on Digital to Learn.
If you enjoyed this podcast, there are three things we ask you to do. One, come back and join us again. Two, tell your friends about us. And three, give us a positive ranking on your favorite podcast platform.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
It's a digital world.
Always keep learning.